You've got the story of Eutychus. The kids always love that story. You know, if you preach too long, somebody might fall asleep, fall out a window, and die. So we've got some really neat pieces of information there. But I read through these, and I made a point. I just tried to read chapter 17 through 21 over and over and over again, and then something started to speak to me. There was a constant theme, and even that theme continued on to chapter 22, which I was relieved because I thought, Dale, if I'm going to have to do the next five chapters, I hope my lesson applies, and it does. But I couldn't help but notice the persecution of Paul. Now, what you might not realize sometimes is when you go through just five chapters, it covers years of information. And as we're covering Paul's years of traveling, as he's going through his ministry, he's visiting churches, he's reestablishing some of the people he's already met. He's trying to make some corrections along the way, some things that the churches need help with. But along the way, constantly, he's being persecuted. Now, that's one of those things that we probably don't understand near as well as what Paul understood. I remember years ago, there's a person I worked with, and they way outranked me, which made it very uncomfortable. But every time they saw me, they knew I was a church member. They knew that I was pretty active in the church. Every time they passed me in the hall, they would make some snide comment about the church, some comment about God, and put me down. Now, they didn't want to study with me. They didn't want to have any discussions about this. All they wanted to do was make their comment, smile, and walk on. And I got to the point where I avoided this person, because I wanted to talk to them. I wanted to have that opportunity to let them know about Christ and know about God and the Bible and study. They didn't have any interest in that. Well, folks, that's pretty petty compared to what Paul went through. Paul went through persecutions. As he went to Athens, they were very intellectual people. They were interested in what he had to say. And some of them accepted it, and some of them just blew him off and said, "You don't know what you're talking about." Scoffed at him. We've only got just a little bit of information about Paul's journey, but I imagine every now and then walking down the road, someone probably gave him an elbow, maybe a shove. He might have even got a rock thrown in the back of his head. But what we do know for sure is Scripture tells us that he was persecuted. He was beaten, he was arrested, he was put in jail. These people wanted to kill him. If we inch a little bit further, since Dale cheated, I'm going to cheat too. If you get to the next chapter, in chapter 22 and 23, you find out that there's a group of men who make an oath. And they say, "We are not going to eat and we're not going to drink until Paul's dead." And as I read through these scriptures and I read through this persecution that Paul's dealing with, the question in my mind is, how did he do it? Where did his strength come from? I like to listen to Way FM. It's Christian music. And a lot of these songs, folks, they come from Bible verses. And there's a song that always reminds me, where does my help come from? My help comes from the Lord, the maker of heaven and earth. And as I thought about that song and I thought about that psalm that it comes from, that's what led me to the lesson today. How did Paul make it through persecutions? He says, "I lift my eyes to the mountains or to the hills." Where does my help come from? It comes from the Lord, the maker of heaven and earth. This is probably not a slide you expected to see in a sermon. I want you to know, just to be transparent, it took me a while to find a track star running hurdles that was appropriate for church, because a lot of what they wear is pretty revealing. And so I had to look for a while to find this. But when I think of running hurdles, that guy in the middle, that's what I think of. That's what comes to my mind. You see, when I was in middle school and high school, I ran track. And I was a sprinter. If you had to run more than one lap, I didn't want anything to do with it. But I could run the short ones, you know, like you're being chased by a bear or something. I can do that. And so I ran the hurdles. And as I was running the hurdles in middle school, one of the struggles, especially in middle school, is that to be successful running the hurdles, you have to three-step the hurdles. And so you can see he's got a lead leg. And that lead leg, you want the same lead leg going over the hurdle every time. And in order to do that, you have to have three steps in between the hurdles. Well, I was fast. I could take off that starting line. I could attack that hurdle. I had great form, not as good as his, but I had pretty good form. But after that first hurdle, I struggled. And the reason I struggled is because I looked good to the first hurdle, but the second and third, I slowly started to lose momentum. And as I slowed down, it became harder and harder to three-step those hurdles. I'd usually get to the seventh or eighth, and then I'd have to do all these stutter steps like everybody else was doing. And then a coach came along one time, and he gave me this gold, valuable nugget of information that changed my hurdling life forever. You think, wow, you know, there's some big things that go on in people's life. Well, in middle school, it was hurdling for me. That was a big thing. And he came up and he said, Brian, he said, you've got the speed, you've got the form. And he said, but there's one thing that you're missing. And I want to show you this slide. Now, don't look at the gentlemen's faces because they look like they're in pure agony, okay? And these guys probably, they would cringe if they had any idea that their picture's showing up in a sermon. But I want you to look at the African-American guy on the right side of the screen. And I want you to look at his leg where his knee looks like it's up in his chest. You see, what my problem was is my lead leg would come over the hurdle and my trail leg would follow right behind it. And then both legs would end up pretty close to each other. And he said, you'll never three-step it doing that, Brian. He said, when that lead leg comes down, your trail leg has to come up and out towards the next hurdle. And if you can do that, you can three-step. And it changed my life. You see, Paul's life was full of hurdles. Paul knew that there was going to be another hurdle. When I ran the 110-meter hurdles, there were 10 of them. And I knew I wouldn't reach the finish line until I got over that 10th hurdle. Paul knew that life was full of hurdles. You can attack one with everything you've got, but if you're not prepared for the next one, you'll fail. Just as I was failing, I was struggling. But see, Paul knew something that I hope that we can learn today. Where does our strength come from? It comes from the Lord. In Acts chapter 20, verse 23, Paul says, I consider my life worth nothing to me. My only aim is to finish the race and to complete the task that the Lord has given me. The task of testifying to the good news of God's grace. This was his goal. This is what helped to get him over every single hurdle. This is what helped to give him that strength. Is he looked at it as running a race. And until you've reached that finish line, folks, until we take our last breath, we're in the race. And God's going to put hurdles. I knew exactly how high my hurdles are, but in real life, we don't know. You don't know the hurdle that's going to face you tomorrow at work. You don't know the hurdle that's going to face your health, possibly, or a relationship that you've got. How am I going to pay my bill next week? We all have struggles. We all have persecutions. And some of those hurdles are small. Some of them are pretty high. Paul knew that they were coming, but he also knew it was never going to be the end. There was always going to be another one. His persecutions ranged from verbal abuse, as we mentioned before, people making fun of him, people saying he's crazy. If we go chapters ahead again into next week and the week, Paul is on trial. And one of the men make a suggestion. They say, well, maybe you've been studying too much. It's gone to your head. You're crazy. Sometimes it's verbal abuse. A lot of times that's what we get. But Paul had much more than that. How do you live tomorrow knowing that people have made a promise to take your life? I'm not going to eat or drink. Well, those poor folks must have starved to death because God was taking care of Paul. God was making sure that he was okay. So number one, God supplied strength. Doesn't this seem like the obvious place to find strength? In Acts chapter 18, verse 9, God says to Paul, he says, "Do not be afraid. But speak and do not keep silent, for I am with you and I have had many people in this city." When I think of this word, this phrase, do not be afraid, I go back to the book of Joshua. Remember when Joshua took over? At the end of the book of Deuteronomy, Moses has led the people out of Israel. He's led the Israelites out of Egypt. He's taken them through the wilderness for 40 years. And all of a sudden, because of his sin, he doesn't get to go into the promised land. And so he dies there, but he gets to see it from a distance. And now there's a change in leadership. And now it's Joshua. Can you imagine some 2.5 million people who have put all of their faith every day of their life into this man Moses, and he's gone. What are we going to do? And you get to Joshua chapter 1, verse 6, and you know what God says? Be strong and courageous. Four different times, folks, in the first chapter of Joshua chapter 1, God says the same thing. Be strong and courageous. And then we might ask that question, why? People have told me that. You're dealing with persecutions. You're dealing with issues. You're dealing with your own hurdles in life. What's going to help me to be strong and courageous? What God told Joshua is the same thing God's telling Paul right here, because I got your back. I'm going to take care of you. I'm going to make sure that you fulfill the jobs that I've got destined for you. See, God's got our back. Acts 19:11, God did extraordinary miracles. Not just miracles. It's one thing to say God did miracles. God did extraordinary miracles. He took it to the next level. The scripture says that even handkerchiefs and aprons that were touched by him were taken to the sick and they were healed. Now, what kind of confidence does that give Paul? As Paul is going through his journey, as Paul is dealing with persecutions day in and day out, people wanting to kill him, to stone him, to scourge him, you name it, what gives him that confidence? You see, by performing these miracles, God is saying, I've got your back. I'm going to give you strength to take that next hurdle and to continue on in life. I'm going to give you strength to get through the beatings and the persecutions. You see, that's God confirming Paul's life. If Paul was not following God's will, God wouldn't be performing these miracles. God wouldn't be day in and day out giving him the spiritual, the miraculous signs that he needed to make it to the next day. We see the story of Eutychus I mentioned earlier in Acts chapter 20. Paul's preaching. He preaches late into the night. You've been there where you've been kind of warm. You're in the upper room and somebody's speaking and going on and on and on, and you fall asleep. Now, what's that going to do for the gospel message? Well, the last guy that heard it died, right? That doesn't do a lot for the message. Paul goes down there and Paul lays his body on top of this man and he brings him back to life. What did that do for the gospel message? You see what I mean? God's giving Paul strength day by day, over and over. There they go. Number two is that Christians supply strength. You see, we need each other. As Paul was going through constantly, you start reading names in chapter 17 through 21. You start reading about people who were there for Paul. As Paul is traveling, he's traveling with people. When he stops at a city, he surrounds himself with people. Genesis chapter 2, verse 18, God has created everything. He's looking down at Adam and he makes this statement. He said, the Lord God said, it is not good for the man to be alone. I will make a helper suitable for him. From the first days of creation, God knew it's not good for us to be alone. In prisons, sometimes when they want to punish someone, they put them in what's called solitary confinement. Sometimes I feel like I'd like to be there, don't you? I'd like to be somewhere where it's just quiet, but it's not good for us to be there for an extended period of time. To be in a room where there's no windows, there's no communication with anybody. Somebody might just slide you a tray of food and that's it. You can't talk. You can't turn on the TV and at least see an image of a person. You start to go crazy. It has its toll on you. As Paul is going through these difficult times, verse after verse, chapter after chapter, we read people's names. There's Silas and Timothy, Priscilla and Aquila, many disciples. Acts chapter 17, verse 5, Paul stayed with Jason, who risked his life to be with Paul. They were after Paul. They couldn't find him. So what'd they do? They grab Jason. They take him out and they beat him. Now, how's that for support? These guys know what's going to happen. If you hang around me, Paul's telling these people, if you hang around me, there's going to be trouble. If you hang around me, you might get arrested. You might lose your job. Now I want you to put yourself in their sandals. You're walking around. Are you going to hang out with Paul? Are you going to be there when he worships? Are you going to be there when he's on the street corner preaching, knowing there's a possibility you could be arrested? Knowing as a wife that you could lose your husband. And if you lose your husband, you're going to lose the money that goes with that. He's not going to be able to perform his job. Acts 18:1, we read about Aquila and Priscilla. They were tent makers just like Paul, and so they stayed together, encouraging each other. Acts 19:22, two of those who ministered to him. You know, I read a statistic the other day, and it surprised me, but then the more I thought about it, it didn't surprise me. But it said people who are preachers or depending on what denomination they go to, the pastor, the person who's the speaker at the church, 80% of them don't have a best friend. They may have a million friends, but they don't have a best friend. You see, even sometimes preachers need ministry. Preachers need to be encouraged. Preachers need to be refreshed. Sometimes elders need that as well. They take on so much and they're so solely focused on one area of their life that they need other people to help them out in other areas of their life. And we see that right here. We see that Timothy and Erastus in Acts chapter 19 ministered to Paul. Paul's ministering to the church. He's trying to establish church and encourage Christians, create disciples. And what's happening? He's got some other people that are trying to help take care of him. Acts 20, verse 7, on the first day of the week, the disciples came together. We shared just a moment ago in the Lord's Supper. You ever look around during the Lord's Supper? I know some of you close your eyes and you meditate and you think about what's going on. But there's a reason we're all here together taking it as a church. It encourages me. It encourages me to see the mom who has the little baby that cries and cries and cries and fusses and fusses. And she probably walks out the door thinking, why'd I even come? But she's encouraged me. She is starting that baby off right. And not very long, that baby's going to be in a classroom back there singing, I love to pat the Bible. And the B-I-B-L-E. They're growing and training these kids. You see, folks, you encourage me when I see you here. And when I don't see you here, then I wonder. I worry, I'm concerned. I haven't been here very long, so you have to give me some time to get to know you. And then I can start worrying, right? When you look at the early church in Acts chapter 2 and Acts chapter 4, the church was established, and what did they do? The scripture says that they met daily. These people needed to be together, and they knew that it was important. Acts chapter 2, verse 44 says all believers. It doesn't say some believers. It doesn't say the leadership of the church. It says all believers were together and had everything in common. You skip down to verse 46, and there's another all verse. There's another all-encompassing verse. It says every day they continued. So all of them were meeting together, and then it says they did it every day. They continued to meet together in the temple courts. They broke bread in their homes, and they ate together. You remember the go-to church Bible verse? When I was growing up, we had a teacher, and it was a very different class. I'm not sure that I would recommend it, but he would go through the class, and he would pick on somebody. He'd say, Jerry, why do we go to church? And if Jerry didn't have a Bible verse, then Jerry, you go look up that Bible verse. Then he'd move on to somebody else, and he'd say, Lee, why do we take the Lord's Supper? And so you very quickly learn to start memorizing these Bible verses. Why do we go to church? We have Hebrews 10, 24, and 25, right? Don't forsake the assembling of the saints. Well, folks, that's not the go-to-church Bible verse. That's the get-together Bible verse. It's bigger than a church service. When we look at Acts chapter 2 and Acts chapter 4, and we see that they were meeting together, all of them were meeting together, and they were meeting together daily. It was important to be together. There is strength in numbers. If you haven't figured that out, then, you know, here's a shock for you. There's strength in numbers. It helps me to know that I've got a buddy with me. It helps me to know that when I go knock on a door, and I went door knocking when I was a freshman in high school. We went on a mission trip, of all places, to Devil's Lake, North Dakota. You know, we were at the Devil's Lake. So we were knocking door. I learned my lesson. I'd knock on the door, they'd open it, and I immediately would kind of take a step in. I literally had a door slammed and hit my nose. So I learned I knocked when they opened. I took a step back after that. Right? But I wasn't there at the door by myself. I don't think I could have done it. I was very shy, very quiet. I had people that were with me, encouraging me, helping me along through that process. You see, Christians supply strength. In Matthew chapter 26, we read about Jesus, one of the last days that he's on earth. He knows that severe persecution is about to happen. And you might think, well, this is Jesus. Isn't he the exception to the rule? Isn't this God in human form? And if anyone's got strength and power, it's Jesus. But listen to these verses. Jesus went with his disciples to a place called Gethsemane. And he said to them, sit here while I go over there and pray. You see, what he's doing is he's got a larger group. And so he leaves the larger group. And then we get to verse 37. He takes a small, close-knit group with him. He takes Peter, James, and John. It says he took Peter and the two sons of Zebedee with him, and he began to be sorrowful and troubled. And he said to them, my soul is overwhelmed with sorrow to the point of death. Stay with me and keep watch with me. Even Jesus is pouring his heart out to other people. We need to do that as well. You need to have somebody that you can pour your heart out to. Somebody that's not going to judge you. Somebody that's going to just be a shoulder that you can cry on sometimes and say, I've got this struggle and I need help. I had a gentleman years ago that asked me, he said, Brian, he said, I'm too ashamed to tell you what my problem is, but will you email me or will you call me or will you talk to me every now and then and just ask me how things are going? And I said, sure. So periodically, I check in with this guy. I have no clue what he's dealing with. And he's not at a place where he's willing to tell me. but he knows he needs help. He knows he needs encouragement. And so we check in with each other every now and then. You see, we need each other. You go to Proverbs, you go to Ecclesiastes, and you can find all kinds of verses about friends. One who has unreliable friends soon comes to ruin, but there is a friend who sticks closer than a brother. You know, brothers and sisters, we can hurt each other. We can wrestle and punch and call each other names, but no one else can. Have you ever been there? I can treat my brother like dirt, but you better not talk about him. There's a closeness there. But the writer here says that there's a friend that's even closer than that, closer than a brother. Folks, that's what you need. If you don't have it, you need to find it. We need God for strength, but we need each other for strength. Ecclesiastes writer talks about a cord of three strands is not quickly broken. There's that phrase, there's strength in numbers. It's very important. And then finally, number three, faith supplied strength. Now, this one might seem a little odd, but when you think about it, this might even be point number one. I had to make God point number one. I can't move God to number two or number three. But you see, without faith, God doesn't matter. Without faith, there is no church. And so you've got free will. No one's going to make you get up and go do something. Well, sometimes a parent might. Sometimes your boss might. But we have free will. God's not going to make us do anything. He promises to strengthen us and encourage us along the way. But we have to have the get up and go. We have to have that ability to take that step on our own. And so Paul's strength, Paul's faith is what helped him. Look at some of these verses. He's preaching the good news about Jesus and the resurrection. We already know what happens to Paul because of that. He's constantly persecuted. Acts 18, verse 5, Paul devoted himself exclusively to preaching, testifying to the Jews that Jesus was the Messiah. The gospel message was his primary goal in life. That's what he was doing, and nothing was going to stop him. You can smack him, you can beat him, you can call him names, you can put him in prison, and whoever he sees, he's going to start preaching to. And if he doesn't have anyone to see, he's going to start writing letters. That's the Paul that, you see, his faith is growing. Acts 18, 28, he vigorously refuted the Jewish opponents. Acts 19, he entered the synagogue and he spoke boldly because of his faith in God. That gave him strength. Because of his faith and the strength by other Christians, his faith kept growing, it kept building and getting stronger, where this man is devoted, he's vigorous, and he's bold. He gets help from God. He gets help from other Christians. But you see, you have to have your own strength to go along with that. Acts chapter 17, verse 2 says, as was his custom, Paul was in the synagogue. Paul had his own faith. One day a spirit came along to some people that were trying to cast out some spirits. And they said, Jesus we know, Paul we know, but you we don't know. That tells us what kind of guy Paul was. That even the evil spirits knew who he was, and they were afraid of him as well. In Acts chapter 20, verse 19, listen to what Paul says. He says, I serve the Lord with great humility and with tears and in the midst of severe testing by the plots of the Jewish opponents. You see, one of the things that we don't like to hear is James chapter 1, verse 2. Consider it pure joy, my brothers and sisters, when you face trials of all kinds, because the testing of your faith produces or develops perseverance. Have you ever heard someone say, be careful that you when you start praying for patience? Wouldn't it be wonderful if patience came in gift-wrapped for Christmas? You know, Robert, what is it you'd like for Christmas? I'd like patience. Okay, well lucky, I went onto Amazon, they had free two-day shipping, and it's there, he opens the box, boom, I got patience. It doesn't work that way. Patience is like getting a set of Legos that are 2,000 pieces and you get one in the mail every day. It can be very frustrating. But you see, it's a developing process. It's not something where, bam, you've got it. It's something where it grows and it increases just a little bit at a time. Faith is the same way. Paul's faith was helping to take him day by day. You see, with growing faith, there's momentum. When you've got that big concrete ball and you're out there exercising and working out, you're trying to push that thing. The hardest part of the push is at the very beginning. Once you get some momentum and you get that ball rolling, it takes itself. You ever heard of muscle memory? Coaches, they've heard of muscle memory. You got to learn the right movements. Years ago, when I was working in IT, the funniest thing, we'd have to help people with passwords. And you'd say, "What's your password?" And people would say, "I don't know." And I'd say, "Well, don't you type it every day?" And they'd say, "Yeah." But you see, they had typed it so much that their fingers just typed their password and they didn't know what it was. And so they would, and I'm not kidding, it happened all the time. Now they make you change your password so much that you can't remember it. But these people would have to watch their fingers type the password. Faith is the same way. You see, as we're developing and growing faith, then our faith tends to carry us when we don't even realize it. You can go, if you have the physical ability, and you can run up a flight of steps without even thinking about it. And if you're like me, if you look at the steps, you'll fall. As long as I don't look at them, my brain knows what to do, my legs know what to do, and they just go. And faith is the same way. We train these children when they're young. You learn how to overcome temptation. You might fail three times, succeed once. The next time you'll fail twice, you'll succeed twice. The next time you'll only fail once, you'll succeed three times. You see, there's momentum in faith. Paul got his strength from God. He got his strength from other people. But he got his strength from himself. Paul's last letter, the last chapter of his letter, 2 Timothy chapter 4, Paul knew that his life was going to be over soon. At the very beginning, we looked at Acts chapter 20, verse 23, where he says, "My aim is to finish the race." In 2 Timothy chapter 4, that's exactly what he's doing. He's in prison. He knows he's not going to get out. He knows that he has cleared the last hurdle and that the finish line is ahead. And he says, "I have fought the good fight. I have finished the race. I have kept the faith." Every day of your life when you struggle, and we're all going to struggle, we're going to struggle with different things, you need to be able to quote, you need to be able to think about Psalm 121. "I lift my eyes into the hills, and where does my help come from?" And some of you this morning feel like you need some help. Some of you this morning have had a rough week. You've had some temptations that have overcome you, and you've struggled. But folks, you need someone to reach out to. You need to reach out to God first. Sometimes I'm guilty of not doing that. I'm guilty of calling. I'm guilty of Googling something, right? Some people go to a bottle of pills. Some people go to a drink. But that's not where our help comes from. Our help comes from God. I'm going to offer the Lord's invitation. Jesus invites you. He's done the hard work. He's gone through the persecution. He's hung on the cross, and he's done that for your forgiveness, so that you can live every day the way Paul lived and have that kind of strength. But that invitation is open to everyone. We have elders, we have shepherds who will come forward. And if you feel like you need to confess something or you need a prayer in a public way, they're there for you. After services, they'll be in the corner. If you have something that you don't want to be made public, but you still need help, they're there for you. We're all here for you. But the Lord offers his invitation. Won't you come as we stand and sing?